The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of the Coalition or of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
What is going on, people? Welcome to Throw Down Your Questions, episode 182. I'm your host, Tony Polanco, and I'm joined by Emilio Lopez.
Sup, people? Throw down your questions.
Chris Seeley.
Hey, what's up, everyone?
Carlos Romero.
Yo, yo, yo.
Brett Murdoch.
Shut up, head.
And Adam Vale.
Goddamn Valkyries and God of War. Shit, fuck.
What's going on? What do you mean, where are the questions this week? We got them, man. You're not part of the show. I don't need to give you the questions, bruh. That's an interesting question, man. If you're talking
like,
about,
give me those questions. Yeah,
if he's asking, like, oh, how come they're not in the description? Because I need to put them in there. Remember, we're doing this through Restream. I can't put shit in there beforehand. You know?
Yeah, it's also one little quick underside of all of this. It's actually very difficult to put information into the edit information inside of a live stream while the live stream is happening. Last night I was, well, you know, Riku was doing his second playthrough on Final Fantasy, and like I was trying to put the whole information on there, and it literally would flip back to the old, you know, like throw down your question, you know, throw down is blah blah blah, yeah. You know, like the usual spiel that we always have on our podcast.
Yeah, so, very hard to edit. I've done it, but it is. Sometimes it'll just switch it on back on you. So,
yeah.
So, DipDop, I don't know if this is the first time you're noticing that, because it's been like that for like 50 episodes, maybe. However long we've been on Restream, it's been like that this entire time. It's definitely been over a year, you know?
I'm not sure how long you've been watching DipDop, but like when we used to do questions, we did used to be able to show them on the screen, but
Exactly.
But we kind of like ditched that idea because.
Oh no, he's not asking about that. That's some insider stuff. Like the first 20 episodes, so we actually did have the actual questions on the screen, but we haven't done that since like episode 20. You know,
I think he's probably just going from catching us after the show to catching us live. So you know,
man, he's watching.
Ain't throw no shade, man. If you're just moving to catch us live, welcome. It's a much better experience when you catch us live.
But he's been watching us live for a bunch of times.
I don't know.
That's what I'm saying, man.
Yo, Tony, put them questions in the descriptions now.
Yeah, it's always interesting.
Maybe he's just saying like we're like maybe he's ready for questions. Let's get on with this shit.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, dude. I can't put the. I mean, again. Once the show starts, those questions will not be there because I can't even go in there to edit until it goes live. Understand? Mm-hmm. By the way, I'm not going to name anybody here, but basically, we've been doing this forever, and we still get questions like, are you guys going to be streaming tonight? I'm like, unless we say otherwise, we're always streaming at the normal times. We've never, like, I could understand that question if we deviate a lot, but we don't. Like, the amount of times we change our schedule in a year, you could count on one finger and still have fingers left over. I mean, one hand and have fingers left over. I'm like, dude, and this year, I don't think we may change our schedule at all. You know, usually the schedule happens between, your schedule changes happen between E3 and New York Comic Con. Probably not going to happen this year, you know, since Carlos has the power to OBS. You know, so yeah, very odd question we got. Like, are you guys streaming tonight? What? When did we say we weren't? You know,
they
weird.
Sure, man.
Yeah, I don't get 182 episodes. Like, what is that? Like 200, 300 episodes?
Hey, who's asking this? Are they new?
No, they're not. That's the other thing. They're not. No. They've been listening to us for years.
No, we're gonna be here. We're gonna be here unless some sort of horrible catastrophe happens. We're gonna be here.
Yeah, we've never ever like changed schedule on you without letting you know like a week in advance. You know, mm-hmm. That's never happened.
Really interesting. Manny, I would postulate, having been on the podcast with you guys long enough, almost every single one of us has had a horrible tragedy visited upon us, and we've still done the podcast.
Been on the show.
Yeah, man. That's how it is. That's just how it is. Just interesting questions. Something else I was going to say, but I'll leave that for another time. All right. Before we start, I want to give a big shout out to our boy Riku-san One, man, who's doing something very interesting. He's streaming all of Final Fantasy VII for us. He's never played the game before. He's popping his cherry with this. So, and the streams have done very, very well. You guys seem to like it. So he's going to keep them coming, man.
And I'm usually waiting, watching in the wings to make sure everything's running nice and good and, you know, stuff like that. So I'm in there, just not in there. You know,
he's Batmaning.
Yeah, I'm Batmaning, just watching. But I mean, everybody in the stream has been very, very cool. Like, you know, because Riku's, you know, rather than using a strategy guide or anything like that, he's kind of depending on the chat to kind of like, hey, so how do I do this? Or, you know, what am I supposed to do here?
Whoa. He's interacting with his audience.
Yeah, I know. Look at that, right? Yeah, there's a good amount. There's a really good a good cast of folks, you know, regular listeners and, you know, a bunch of, you know, some new faces coming in and just saying, oh, yeah, you just do this and do that. So it's good stuff. So now, you know, after two streams, after 8 hours, he has finally left Midgar.
You know, I gotta say, it's been nice having Riku around a little bit more. For those of you who haven't listened to us for years, Riku used to be a regular on the show, and we all miss the shit out of him and enjoy him when he comes back in. So it's been nice having him jump on the podcast a few times. It's nice having him stream. It's nice having him back in the family. I know he had to go pursue doing his own things for a while, but it's just good to have him back around. So Riku, if you're in this, good to have you back, buddy.
Yeah, you know, it's always great to have Riku. He's pretty entertaining on there, going nuts about certain little aspects of there. You know, he was talking about, like, you know, because in Midgar, there's some additional things that you can do that you can't really do in the normal game. Like, there's a sneaking section in the game in the Midgard section. There's like, you know, like a little bit of you know, pattern recognition stuff. That stuff where you have to, you know, to get the wig, you have to kind of do squats, you know, all these little things. He's like, yeah, man, these things weren't in the other games.
Yeah. All right, man. So yeah, thank you, Riku. So let's get on with it, man. Questions. So the first one is from G Megaforce 123. All right. Were you ever glad a series you loved ended? When I thought Metal Gear Solid 4 was the end, it felt like the best way to end the series, go out on top. I wasn't sad to see it go. I was glad to see it end. I also felt the same about the Soulsborne games. Those games take over my life, and I'm glad to be done with all five. A new game would make me a little annoyed, as weird as that sounds. Anyone ever feel this way about a game series you loved?
I agree with the Metal Gear Solid 4 one. I felt at the time, I was like, you know, everything was revealed. There's all these, you know, everything we need to know has kind of come out about it, and I was very satisfied with it. I always felt like the Metal Gear Peace Walker and Metal Gear 5 were kind of like borrowed time games, like games that were just like, because Kojima was told to make a game, they, you know, he made a game, you know, as good as those games were. So I agree on that one. Another one I was pretty satisfied was the ending of the original God of War series. You know, he beat the shit out of every single freaking god. So what's left after? In fact, like, when I heard that Ascension was coming, I'm like, why are we doing another one? God of War's over.
Didn't that same thing happen to Legacy of Kain, where it jumped the shark a little bit on its own storyline? I mean, I know we all love Legacy of Kain, but there was a certain point which you're like, all right.
Three is actually my least favorite of the Soul Reaver's games.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They kind of wrote themselves into a corner with their narrative. Like, yeah, the world is descending into chaos. It's becoming more of a vampire-based world. Like, how far into this weird, dead, dystopian future can you throw things before it starts to not get super interesting? And I think that's where 3 landed. And if you did a 4, like, where would you even do? Like, what would 4 even fucking have been about? 20,000 years after the formation of a vampire kingdom? Like, you'd almost have to reboot it into a whole new civilization again, because everything's dead and gone. And I love the game, but if you follow the flow of the narrative, it was time for it to end. And, well, I got bad news for you, buddy. The Soulsborne games, they're not over.
No, they're not
over. Souls games are over. And I will agree. I think Dark Souls, and this is the one point that I had to make, so I'm just jumping in line here. Dark Souls 3 had to be the end. And I'm curious as to whether Chris will not agree with this, but the narrative of the Souls games was the first one established the world and the lore. The second one established that this is a repeating cycle. And so if the third one didn't have some kind of finality to it, anything after that would have just been, oh, you're repeating the cycle again. And now you're repeating the cycle again. And it would have just, it would have taken away the impact of the entire series. So it had to be almost a three-act story of establish canon, establish that this is a pattern, break pattern, end of story.
Yeah, I could agree with that. Although we got that remastered, though.
You're like, ooh.
Yeah, by the way, I don't know how to answer this question because I can't, you guys could maybe help me with this. I can't think of a series that ended that hasn't, isn't still around. You know, like I would have said, God of War, but they just made a new one, Uncharted. You know they're making another Uncharted game.
That one, I was happy with that.
Mass Effect, they brought Mass Effect back. You know, they brought Mass Effect back.
Andromeda's probably the last one.
Yeah, it is, but that wasn't a satisfying ending.
Are you glad they're probably not going to make another one? Because that's kind of where I'm at. Like, I'm kind of glad they're probably not going to make another Mass Effect based on Andromeda.
Okay, am I overthinking the question? Because my understanding of it is like a game that ended on such a satisfying note that you're like, okay, I'm good.
You're overthinking it. It's a franchise that you loved that you're glad they're not making anymore. And it can,
that
can
never say that. It,
that's it, what it I'm saying. Say yeah, they'll always yeah, make no, another
I
one.
Absolutely can. You absolutely can. Like, you can say like, I loved the franchise, but the story, it was time for the story to stop, or I loved the franchise, but it took a bad turn.
But the question says it was sad. You're not sad to see it go. I think I actually am reading this question correctly. It's like it had a satisfying ending, and you're okay if they never bring another
that's
one.
That's what I, the way yeah. I saw it. Just like, you know, the last Uncharted, that was great ending. If they ever come back
later,
it's not a continuation. They didn't leave it at a cliffhanger. They left it as like, this is it. He's retired. His wife, his kids, he's got a boat. Yeah. That's it.
Adam, okay, thank you. You know what? Okay, I'm very happy with the way Uncharted 4 ended Nathan Drake's story. Okay, so you go. There's my answer.
Well,
then.
The question is more ambiguous. He just gave us an example of a way to attack the question. So I think both are kind of right.
Yeah, that is also true. Well, you can't limit out because he says he's glad the Soulsborne games are over because they ate his life. So that means he's not glad that he's done with it because they came to such a satisfying conclusion. He's glad they're done because they ate too much of his time. And he can call them finished now. So I think both answers are legitimate. I think it's just
I agree.
What franchise has finished that you're glad is over for whatever reason or another.
See, but I'm not glad Mass Effect is over. I don't like the way it went out. You know.
Well, you don't need to mention Mass Effect. I mean, I
do.
What was
have to base it on whatever the last game was, and the last game was Andromeda, and I was not happy with that.
Well, kind of like you, Tony. I kind of like everyone hated the Mass Effect Andromeda, but I don't want this franchise to get even more sort of screwed over in the future. So if they announce a sequel to Mass Effect Andromeda, I don't think anybody's going to be happy.
What if they make it good, though?
You think they will,
It's already tainted, man. They can't use Mass Effect Andromeda in anything. They can't fix that.
No, they can't fix that. But even though Andromeda's concept was actually really cool, I still think they could salvage it if they wanted to. So that's why I don't think it's like, even though it probably is dead, I don't see it as an end, because the way Andromeda ended, it was setting up more games. So I can't consider that a satisfying ending.
And you also didn't hate Mass Effect Andromeda.
I didn't hate it. I was disappointed by it, but I didn't hate it. It was still better than most games out there, you know. But you know, I was still. It set up. It wasn't an ending. It was more of a beginning chapter. So I can't consider that an ending. You know.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this, just because I'm curious, Tony.
Yeah.
Are there any games series that you loved, but you're glad that they're not making anymore because they would just butcher it if they did?
No, because I would have said Metal Gear, but they already made a new Metal Gear last year, and it's fucking horrible. You know. So no, okay, they keep. If it was up to me, I would have ended Metal Gear, but they keep making them. I don't have control over this stuff. You know?
But there's none that actually ended, like, because there are several, there are lots of franchises that were great, and then they came out with a game that you're like, oh my god, is this what it's going to be from here on out? Like, oh no. Like, I'm glad Fable's over, because I knew what the next Fable was going to be, was going to be a 3-verse-1 weird minigame thing that had nothing to do with the Fable universe. And I know that if they continued to make more Fable games, that they would just be abominations, because I saw the horrible abomination of a homunculi coming down the tubes. They slapped the name Fable on. Would I love them to go back and make a new Fable in the spirit of like 2 and 1 and 3? Like, yeah, absolutely. Do I think if they brought Fable back that that would actually happen? No, no way in hell. Not right now, at least. So for now, at least, I'm pretty glad they put Fable to bed because they were just getting ready to abuse the fuck out of it.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I don't know. I'm just having a hard time coming. I'm pretty sure there are examples. They're not coming to my mind right now. You know. Anyway, anybody else want to jump in on this?
I'd say the Arkham series. I'd say that was a good way to end it. I don't see where you go from there unless you make Arkham Planet.
Yeah, you know what? I'm jumping in on Crystal. Yeah, that one had a pretty sad. I was very happy with the end. And if I don't get another Arkham game, I'll be fine with that. Okay. Perfect example. There you go. Yeah. Okay.
Really hard to like think of series that just don't keep getting sequels.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what makes this difficult because they keep getting sequels. Arkham is probably not going to get a sequel. So I think
Infamous we're safe. Doesn't feel like it's going to get another one.
Which one?
Infamous.
Infamous is going to get another one. I guarantee you that. I guarantee you they're going to bring another one.
PS5 you know? Launch game, man.
You know, first. Yeah, they're coming back, especially since the last. It's interesting because the last one actually did very, very well, but they didn't make a sequel for it. But yeah, Infamous is coming back. Watch. But that's what I'm saying. That's what's tricky about this question because most game series, at least the ones I play, they keep coming back. They're not dead. You know.
Well, there are developers who have originally come out with games and that studio has disbanded. So you could say if they ever came back, it wouldn't be the same people.
Yeah, like every time we talk about Sega and stuff, it's like, yeah, they can bring that back, but it's not the same guys. So yeah.
I would have said that about Sonic a year and a half ago.
Yeah, well, they did
before Sonic Mania. Yeah, but that's the thing. The people who make Sonic Mania are not going to be people who made the original Sonic, and it's probably going to be trashed. Instead, they brought me Sonic Mania, which is a fucking love letter to my childhood. So. Yes.
But they also brought you Sonic Forces, which is not a love
letter. Oh, God.
Well, that's not the same.
Those weren't the same guys.
The original guys that made your beloved Sonic.
Oh, fuck.
By the way.
Damn, son. Some bullshit. Yeah. All right, man.
Like, I refuse to believe this.
Yeah. All right, man. Unless we have anybody else, we shall move on here to the next question. Okay. This is one we've talked about many, many times. So let's try not to go down the rabbit hole, please. All right. Okay. Do you value playtime / engagement or quality more? Do you prefer games that can draw you in and that you can play for a long time that might end up sacrificing moment to moment quality in favor of long play sessions? Or games that may not be as big, but may offer a better experience and shorter bursts. I personally don't really care about the length of games. I only care if they are a meaningful and fun experience. So for me, quality. All right.
I agree.
Yeah. At least I'm the quality versus quantity guy.
Quality
you know?
Versus quality.
I would say it depends. If we're playing a multiplayer game, I think quantity is a lot more important because it's just something. I mean, quality. It's hard to emphasize quality on a multiplayer game that much because it doesn't have that much focus in one thing.
Yeah.
As opposed to like narrative driven games, which I would say quality is more important because you can play it. You can play a 3-hour game that's will suffice as a game for you. Like sort of like Journey.
What was it? A Way Out. That was multiplayer. Well, that was co-op requirement online, and that was about 5 hours that game. But that was an amazing story. It was great. We had a blast playing it.
But I guess because it's a co-op game, like when I say multiplayer, it's like a competitive multiplayer.
Yeah.
So this is required. I can't play alone if I even wanted to.
Yeah.
No. But I just added the caveat, competitive multiplayer.
No, I'm glad you did add the caveat because this kind of shows, you know, and I've always said when I think about games, multiplayer doesn't even register into my head. You're actually 100% right. If it's a multiplayer game, quantity is more important than quality because you want to keep playing that shit over and over and over again. You don't want to just do the same like 3 missions or something. So you have something there. You know, it's like with a single player game, you don't want like a 100-hour story because you know that shit's going to be dragging off forever. You want something like nice and tight. But with a multiplayer game, you want as much shit as possible. You want that quantity in there. Very good caveat. I don't really consider multiplayer, but that is a good point, you know?
Yeah, not even just competitive multiplayer, but MMOs, right? That's why they're constantly adding shit to do.
Yeah.
I mean, like Star Trek Online is the only one I ever played. They're up to like season 10 of stuff. They're just constantly throwing shit in that game. World of Warcraft, how long has it been going? 12 years?
Yeah, hold on a minute. Carlos just fucked me up right now. I need to change my answer. Okay, I need to change my answer. Okay.
14 years, by the way.
Yeah, right. Quality quality when it comes to single player games, quantity when it comes to multiplayer games. There you go. That's my new answer.
Sort of.
Brett asked these interesting questions. Brett, you know damn well what I mean by quality, bro.
It was quality to you.
No,
quality varies depending on.
Yeah, it does.
Definitely varies. Talking about the value of the assets or the experience that you take away. And the reason I bring this up is
experience you take away.
Okay. Then there's this weird middle ground, and maybe this is just for the weird people like me who like survival games and whatnot, but there are games that balance their timing very well, where you deal with small minutiae. Like it's kind of like in Fallout when you're building your settlement, you're setting lights, and you're doing all these small things. What some people call walking simulators, but those tend to, like in DayZ, mean, let me put it this way. The games where I've had the most intense experiences, the ones that actually make my palms sweat and my heart beat in my throat, the ones that legitimately put me on the edge of my seat to where I can hear my pulse and I'm freaking the fuck out, like those moments have all come in games that also have long stretches of things that you, most people, especially Tony, would consider boring. It's really only terrifying when a zombie horde comes crashing at your gates if you've been sitting watching, hoping that that zombie horde isn't going to come, if it's kind of a non-scripted event, in my opinion. So the games that to me have been most impactful are also the ones that you have to put some time into, because you don't immediately know that, okay, now this thing is going to happen, that this thing is going to happen, that this thing is going to happen. Not having that solidity of pacing creates a more immersive experience and a more intense experience. So I have a really hard time answering this question, because a lot of times the games that provide the best experience are also the ones that I tend to play more because I like that experience and want to keep going back for it. Even things like Dark Souls, where, you know, I have a chance to lose my stuff. Like, oh my God, that's what makes it fucking freak me out. Like, I may be just grinding the same thing for the 30th time and then suddenly an invader hits me. So I've gone from boring to freaking the fuck out in the drop of a hat. So
here's how.
By the way, can I answer for old Brett?
Yes.
I got to throw you in here. You always said that you need one hour per dollar you spent, right?
I generally consider that to be a mark for value. Correct. Now there are times like 1 hour of enjoyment. That doesn't necessarily mean just playing it. Like,
yeah.
I have talked about BioShock and remunerated on BioShock and replayed BioShock so many times that I've justified buying it three times over, which I've done. So, you know, even down to just having like cool discussions and about how much it's affected me and how much I've thought about it, like even presence of mind, like, so there are really good story games and everything like that, that I would say, you know, are quality, but if they're that good, I kind of want to replay them. And then I account that into the amount of time I've spent playing it. So, you know, sure, I beat BioShock in 12 hours, but I've played it four times. So,
and I don't think that applies to everyone, Brett, because, like, for example, for me, I beat BioShock Infinite in 10 hours and I paid the full $60 of it, but I would still say it was a justifiable purchase because to me, the quality of those 10 hours were superb, you know? Kind of similar thing with The Order. For a lot of people, The Order is a really short game and it gets criticized for it. But a lot of people that like the game say that the quality of the game is what justifies the length of time.
I wouldn't actually argue with that. Interestingly enough, and this is probably something I should have pointed out a very long time ago, just because I believe a dollar for per hour of enjoyment justifies a purchase, that doesn't work the other way around. It doesn't mean that if I get less than 60 hours for $60, that it is automatically an unjustified purchase. Because there are many games that I have played for less than a dollar an hour, which I've thoroughly enjoyed and considered them paid for over and over again. But I will say that if I play a game for 100 hours after spending $30 on it, I may walk away being like, it's not bad. I had some good moments. I had some bad moments, but I have to at least say that I think that I got my money's worth. Right. So that's where that comes from. But in terms of the actual question, like the most intense moments I've had tend to be games that burn you, you know, you put a lot of hours into. Like I imagine I'm probably going to like State of Decay 2 after, you know, really looking into it, because it's about base building, it is about fighting off zombies, it is about strategy, it is about consequence and gambling. You know, do you do you go out and possibly have these four guys permadeath? Oh yeah, it's kind of a roguelike. Have these four, you know, main characters possibly permadeath to get some supplies. Like that game seems very much up my alley. It's a game I'll probably play over and over and over and over again. So, but it also is going to involve a lot of like tending to my garden and making sure the survivors have enough food and water. But I also don't, I might be the only one here. I don't like big moment after big moment after big moment after big moment after big moment. It just, it doesn't feel like it has the correct pacing to me. I feel like you kind of need to build up to a big moment and then drop back down, and then build up to a big moment, and then drop back down. And then towards the finale, yeah, sure, you can do big moment, big moment, big moment. But you can't just have this entire game. Like, I didn't, that's one of the reasons what I have played of The Order, it just felt like leading you from one action sequence into another. And I kind of found that boring after a while because it just, I didn't like the pacing.
That's the same way I felt about even though I did like the infamous DLC thing, that's the same thing I felt about that game when all the story elements of that game were left over. It just felt like I was just grinding and doing these things for nothing. It's like, why am I collecting all these things? I'm fighting these same enemies over and over and over again for what? So then at that point, I just stopped playing it. And I don't like repetitive actions when there is no goal.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Who else has an answer? Jump in. Did everybody? I don't think everybody answered.
I think we did. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Great. Okay. Where the fuck are we right now? Okay. Black Metal Gamer. All right. So his first question is, do you think God of War's high review scores and sales will set higher standards for other companies to step up their games? Yeah, I think so. I think so for sure. For
no,
sure.
I don't think so.
Even Phil Spencer already said, yeah, we're going to start trying to make more games like that.
We've already seen a flip-flop. Doesn't matter.
All I think it'll do is they'll course correct and go, oh, man, people want single-player narratives, and then we'll see a glut of half-assed, half-baked single-player games turned up. That's what I think. Guys like Bobby Kotick and all these asshole suits that run these public don't understand what makes a good product. They only see that something sells and it gets high review scores and high sales, and they're like, shit, we need to do that. Where can we get a mythological hero that fights monsters? But they'll just extract, okay, these are the success points. Okay, somebody make this into a game.
It's not like they haven't tried this before.
Yeah.
Dante's Inferno.
So basically you think we are going to get more single player games. They're just going to be of shit quality.
Yeah, they're going to be mediocre. You might get one company that gets it, but it's not going to be on God of War. So it's just like people have the other companies have copied Zelda, and they're just like, oh, if you take a hero and put him in a fantasy setting and put this magic shit in it and give him elf ears or what, they just take elements of these things and throw it into a game, and it's just mediocre because this has no soul. It has no heart. It just comes from, let's copy that guy. So they're going to look at Kratos and it's like, we got to copy that. People like medieval settings or fantasy, throw gods in there and magic and all this shit. And that's all they see. They only see the surface, right?
Yeah, they're going to miss the point.
Working from that, yeah, you get crap. So it's not going to set us higher standard. All you're going to see is clones of God of War. And they're going to be crap.
Retarded clones like Multiplicity, right?
Here's the thing I don't understand about this. Like, the game, God of War isn't built out of anything new. None of the ingredients are revolutionary. It just does a very good job of balancing them and polishing everything that it presents to you to a very high degree. It is a classic example, kind of along the same lines of Horizon, as same tricks, just done exceptionally well. You know, the quality of this game is amazing. The storytelling is for 80% of it on point. The graphics and the way that they introduce things to you is on point. It doesn't pander to the audience too much. It doesn't apologize to the audience. It has a vision, it executes the vision, and it does it well.
Go ahead. No, go. Keep going.
There's nothing new here. Like, it's like making the world's best chocolate cupcakes. Like, we've all had chocolate cupcakes. You've just done something that we're all very familiar with exceptionally well. So I don't even understand what there is for people to like take out. They can't be derivative of this game because this game essentially is already derivative. They gave the same makeover they gave to Resident Evil 4. It's nothing new. So you can't take that as something revolutionary to move forward. And so, yeah, they're just going to look at all the wrong points about this. They'll be like, what about this game made it successful? And somebody in the room is going to be like, the high quality and the fact that it is what it is unapologetically. And they're going to kick him out of the room and be like, anybody else? Gods? All right, this man's on the right track.
Yeah. And it's like, what mythology haven't we raped yet? Hey, anyone do Egyptian stuff? Assassin's Creed Origins. Fire that man. We're doing Egypt. Let's go.
Yeah, no, you're right about that.
I also think, you know, like EA, you are definitely right that the God of War is in a pedigree of things that have already been done before. And even from the beginning, that's essentially what the God of War series was. The God of War was essentially the Western answer to Devil May Cry and all those kind of beat 'em up sorts of games, you know, action adventure games that the Japanese were making, right? So
there's no shame in that.
Absolutely is no shame in that. It's like, okay, we were inspired by these things, and this is our version of it, you know, with a Western twist to it. I mean, you know, Greek mythology and all that other stuff. So
everybody think about that for just a second. Like, imagine if you came out to your friends one day, and you brought your skateboard out, and you're like, man, check this out. I learned how to do like a double kick flip into a Heely and then pull down a grind and then, and you pull out this amazing trick that you invented that nobody's ever seen before. And then your friend's like, that's cool. And then does the same thing and adds a Christ air on the end of it. You'd be like, what? All right, that's actually, I'm just impressed. That's impressive. Like you just saw it one time and you made it better. I'm a little humbled.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that's the same sort of thing. I mean, like, you know, if you think about it, there's a sinuous sacrifice in God of War they feel like almost the same games. Just God of War had more budget and more stuff, and Sinuous tried to tell a little bit more of a thoughtful story, you know? But it's essentially somewhat of the same sorts of things. So, I mean, it's not going to be that hard to kind of recreate that style. But will the style, what comes out later on be of the same, you know, pedigree as God of War? I don't think so.
Yeah, and that's the sticking point right there.
Happening. More third person.
I'd like to see more third person.
That'd be nice.
I would actually like to see more third person. And I think there's been such a huge success of first-person games that it's just kind of become the default over, you know, and it wasn't always this way. It used to be a little bit more balanced, but it's kind of just become the default to which things like Destiny, which have and Borderlands, which honestly have no reason to even be locked into first-person, have been first-person. So I think the one thing you might see come of this is game developers be like, whoa, people apparently like third person. The over the shoulder thing actually tends to work pretty well, even when you're, you know, aiming and doing ranged attack. Like, yeah, no shit.
PUBG is a third person game.
I'm still perplexed by that.
That's a weird one, right?
Right. Especially for a battle royale type of gameplay where like the reason that, you know, DayZ and Ark and all that was locked into first person was so that you couldn't use the camera to see over a wall that you were strafing around, because it gives you a distinct tactical advantage. So I'm really surprised that PUBG lets you get away with it. Not complaining, just surprised.
Yeah, all right. Anybody else take that as a no? So we'll move on to the next one. Okay, this is an interesting one. What Dreamcast and Sega Saturn games would you like to see make it over to the Switch eShop? My thing is, why the Switch eShop? Why can't I get them on PSN? You know, actually, I would love any Saturn game because none of those have been remade at all. You know, I want to know where this question is coming from. But yeah, I'm going to say make it. I mean, you can make it for anything, but I don't know why it has to be specifically the Nintendo Switch eShop.
I'll tell you why.
OK, but anyway, my answer is put it on PSN and I say yes. Go for it.
Oh, the reason he's talking about putting it on Switch is because it's one of the games that Switch could definitely handle. Like, yeah, PlayStation can definitely run that stuff, and that's not impressive. But Switch, again, like it's like we were talking about earlier this week, man. There's this kind of this weird jump that you come to. Like, you're like, yeah, man. Like, you put a Dreamcast game on PlayStation, that's old news. Put a Dreamcast game on Switch, for some reason, that just strikes you as a little bit more impressive. or maybe more of a fitting place because you're like, well, it's already kind of underpowered. So, you know, that's a great place for rebooting old games from less powerful systems. So that's why I think he said Switch specifically. That's just my fan theory out there that people just kind of have this gimme to the Switch that like, it's underpowered. So, and then they just kind of automatically assume that and move on. So my answer is Power Stone and Jet Grind Radio.
Yeah, we already had Knights. We've had a Crazy Taxi, obviously. We're going to get Shenmue. I would personally love all of the Panzer Dragoon games. That'd be fucking awesome. Burning Rangers would be nice.
Heroes.
Guardian Hero. Yeah, they brought that already, actually. But that
where? When? Who?
It's on Xbox, man. I got that shit. You know, man, bring some of that.
Put that on a real console.
Oh,
I'm kidding. You know? I'm kidding.
Yeah, Chris, go ahead.
Is it just Saturn?
Saturn is a Dreamcast.
Oh, Saturn Dreamcast. I'd bring Sword of the Berserk, from Dreamcast. Yes. Throw Skies of Arcadia.
Bring that shit.
They've been talking about that for years, ever since PS3. They're like, oh yeah, we're gonna put that one out for a remake of that. Where is it, Sega?
Where'd it go?
Wasn't there a treasure game on Saturn that was?
Yeah, man. Guardian Heroes.
Alien Soldier was something else. That was Guardian Heroes. Okay, Alien Soldier was on Genesis. Sorry.
Yeah, Alien Soldier, man. You know.
Yeah, that was a good game. That was in the Sega collection.
That was good.
That's a good, hard fucking game. Let's see. Seems like I would put the both Grandia games.
Ooh, there you go.
Yeah, I would do that because Grandia was on
Dreamcast. It's on Xbox, right? Two.
Yes, I think it's on Xbox. Yeah. Oh, by the way, again, when I'm answering the question, I'm saying PSN, Xbox, and everything. I just switch. It's like that's a waste of time. It's like put it on everything, you know.
Bring it to current gen.
Yes. Yeah, current gen. Yes.
And that's what I would do. Those three, because RPGs would do well. I think Grandia's kind of lost to time.
Yeah, Grandia was fucking amazing too, man. Yeah. People don't know.
That's my list.
All right, Carlos. Nope,
nobody's gonna say Seaman.
Yeah, sure.
No.
Why not? Hey, Brett, I'm with you, brother. Let's get Seaman. Let's go.
If it comes with some shrooms, maybe.
Yeah. I would have said Seaman. It would have been great if everybody still had connects. You could definitely demonstrate.
Oh shit! That's right. That's right. Yeah.
The tech of that thing, but nobody thought of that stuff. So,
Also, let's be honest, in today's political environment, an AI that insults you would just be too triggering.
Man, that's a fact. You know? Yeah. All right. Anybody else? Adam.
It's not going to happen, but the one game that I enjoyed playing on it was the football games.
Oh, NFL 2K?
Yeah.
That would have been awesome. Man. That's true, because that's when they went, like,
and that's when, you know, EA jumped in with Madden. Was like, yeah, we need to start doing it like that.
That's what, and then they just, I remember they used to charge, like, less, because they were saying, no, it's just like a roster update, so we're not going to charge a full price for these games.
So, yeah, for me, that would be awesome.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, Catalog says Fantasy Star. I'm guessing Fantasy Star Online.
Not the real Fantasy Star.
Yeah, not the real Fantasy Star. That bullshit online one, you know. Yeah, but again, not on Switch. Put it on the real consoles. Oh, I said it.
You guys said everything. It's like, you know.
Yeah, I think we pretty much got it covered. The big ones.
You know what? You know what? I'll just say this for the hell of it. I'd love to see Ready to Rumble come back. I love that game.
To Rumble Boxing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, bring that one. Hey, man, I got one for you, man. Not the band, the game. Dragon Force. Motherfuckers don't remember that shit, you know?
Oh, yeah. Dragon Force.
Bring that back. All right. Let's move on here. Warlock 9. Now, he asked us a very long question, but he permitted me to condense it, so I did, because I'm not trying to read all that. Remember, guys, keep it to one paragraph, not five, even though I appreciate that, but too fucking long, you know? So anyway, he goes, do you think the way Xbox backward compatible games scale up in fidelity similarly to a PC game puts pressure on Sony to adopt a similar model? If not, does this automated scalability of older games give Xbox a leg up, assuming both new next-gen systems launch at about the same time, even if PlayStation 5 launches with backwards compatibility out of the box, if the new Xbox scales up resolution and frames previous gen games to the power of the new system, would that be important to you guys? It's a good point that a lot of people aren't talking about. Like, you know how, like, when you play an older game on PC, it'll kind of scale it up a little bit, make it look nicer and stuff. Xbox does that. PlayStation doesn't do that. So he's wondering, would that give Xbox a edge over PlayStation 5 next gen?
Yes. Manny, go ahead.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Actually, those games are not automatically scaled up. There is still a fair amount of development that needs to happen to get those games to do those sorts of things. They have to check them. That's why they haven't just released. Every single game that came from the original Xbox and the Xbox 360. There's a fair amount of development that still needs to happen between them to check to see if everything runs properly.
And then the publisher on the other end has to approve it.
So it's not totally automatic. And not to mention, on the PlayStation 2 games on the PlayStation 4 actually do upscale.
Facts.
As well as doing texture filtering on top of it too. So it does happen. It's not to the point where you just stick a PlayStation 2 game inside of your console and it automatically downloads the game from the store. You kind of still have to buy it again, which is kind of suck.
Yeah. So Manny, would that be important to you?
If they upscaled the games, yeah, it's definitely important.
Would it make you choose an Xbox over a PlayStation?
Would it make me
If the Xbox had that feature and the PlayStation 5 didn't, would that be important to you in purchasing a system?
For backwards compatible Xbox games?
Yes.
The other thing is that I can't say that I'm very married to a lot of Xbox titles. If I was a big Halo fan and that happened, I would probably be, off the walls. But it's not something that actually sells me on there. And not to mention, here's the thing. Like, it is amazing to have Red Dead Redemption working on a modern console with a significant upscale, running in 4K on the Xbox One X, as well as just the fidelity switch that went on to those games. So I think those are awesome, but it's not something that would sell me on a console specifically.
Yeah, I'm gonna just jump in and pretty much agree with you. Yeah, that wouldn't. Here's the thing. Yeah, backwards compatible games playing old games is cool, but you buy a new system for new games. And I'm not really an Xbox guy like that, so I definitely wouldn't go jumping over on Xbox just because they have better looking games. Remember, when we're talking about backwards compatibility for next system, we're also talking about current games that are out now. They would be backwards compatible, but it wouldn't really maybe go, oh shit, I'm not buying a place, I'm buying an Xbox. That's not a big selling point for me, backwards compatibility. Yeah. It's a nice point, but it's not a big selling point. Go ahead, Carlos.
I don't think this is something that's going to move the needle, but it does have the potential for PlayStation fans to pressure Sony to do.
Yeah.
It's like, because when a company sets a new standard, the other one usually adopts because it gets pressured by their fan base. For example, Sony Online, they were pressured for a long ass time to get their shit together to get PSN in check, and eventually they did. But they wouldn't have done it if Xbox didn't pressure them to do it. So I think eventually Sony would adopt sort of Xbox standards for backwards compatibility. But I don't think it's something that's gonna move the needle or get PlayStation guys to buy an Xbox instead of a PlayStation. I agree.
I would say the possibility of a PlayStation fan buying a Xbox in addition to the next PlayStation would be more of a possibility than them just totally switching over. And I think the same thing vice versa. I think a dead-on Xbox fan wouldn't just because the PlayStation has backward compatibility on a specific types of games, it wouldn't get them to get it, but it may interest them enough to also pick up another console in addition to their main one.
Yeah. By the way,
I think you guys are looking at it the wrong way.
Hold on, before you give your answer, Joey and Mighty Nerd are both saying that backwards compatibility is not important. Anyway, go ahead, Brett.
I think you need to think of it more of establishing their ecosystem. So if Microsoft makes it a firm blanket rule that not only because they're doing it over generations to make you feel comfortable with that, not only are all of your online Microsoft purchases going to be accessible through all of your consoles, but they'll be patched in with the higher resolution, because these are all made on PC architecture now. So pretty much it's not that hard to up the resolution, you know, basically turn it from preset medium to preset high graphics. And so you just put that out in a patch. So that, you know, if you buy a new Xbox, not only do all of your games come with you, but they all increase in fidelity so that your games not only travel with you, but they age with you, which sets up more of an ecosystem like Steam has, where games don't tend to age out and leave the sphere of play as quickly. That could change the way that their platform is seen. And I think that could move the needle, especially if Sony failed to respond in kind. So if Microsoft said, we're doing iterative generations, we have the most powerful console out, you know, as long as you keep buying an Xbox, it'll upgrade your games and you can take them all with you. And then everybody looks at Sony and Sony goes, we're not doing that. Then that would be pretty big ammunition for some people, at least.
Yeah, for sure. But hasn't really done much this generation, the backwards compatibility, you know?
It hasn't. It really depends on, and I'm looking at this in terms of if Microsoft decides to go with iterative generations. Because basically right now you have it that Microsoft has, quote unquote, well, technically the most powerful console on the market right now. And if Sony released a new console and then they released their new console, and everybody would say, well, you know, you just released a console a little while ago. And they said, yeah, that's now the base version of this current generation. We're going to put patches out for all of our games that increase the fidelity of them. And if you buy this new version, it'll increase the fidelity of those games even more. There's going to be a lot of crossplay. So now, you know, we still have the most powerful system on the market. And you're not going to lose any of your games by being early adopters. I think that if they kind of went that angle, that would be a pretty sound business strategy to try and hit Sony with, because then they're essentially waiting for Sony to put something out there, and then they put out their new console, and again, they essentially start out the generation at the same time having the most powerful console on the market and a unified platform that both of them fall under. So it's not part, or it's not the problem, and it's not the catalyst that would change things, but I think it could be an important part of that, a series of events that could help Microsoft and help push that needle. An integral part, but not the only one.
All right, Chris, what do you say? Would this be important to you?
To me, yes. To the general gaming audience, no. I think the gaming audience, like, more people get into gaming, younger people don't care about backwards, and we're being pushed out. Like, there's more and more younger gamers, and I think they're gonna care about the latest and greatest stuff. Backwards compatibility is an issue because they didn't play the older stuff.
So I'm curious, if let's say with God of War, you know, this is still around, and then for some reason E3, oh, we got PS5 coming out, and it's out in 2 months. I'm like, what the hell? I just bought this card. Don't worry about it. Backward compatible. In fact, if you bought it through the eShop, the shit carries over. It unlocks there. Merry Christmas.
Yeah, man. Little Timmy only cares about Fortnite, man.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, Fortnite, those type of things. Yeah.
But I'm talking about older backwards. I'm talking about, Timmy doesn't care about PS2 or PS1 or go back.
Nobody cares about it in hindsight, but they're going to care about it in from now forward if we do actually adopt that iterative generation thing, though. That's then backwards compatibility is going to have to be a huge thing.
Right? Oh, sure, from now going forward, sure. But I'm looking at it, to me, like, from my perspective, I care only somewhat. Like, I have a long history, like, nobody's putting a 2600 emulator on Xbox for me. I go back all the way to there, but I'm not okay. Like, ooh, I really need that.
For practicality's sake, let's put the the dividing line when they started to use PC architecture, because it's very easy to upscale a game with PC architecture. When you get back into the cell architecture, then you have to do a whole bunch of shit. PC architecture, though, you just go into the settings and turn them to high. So, like let's say they limited the games to only games on PC that were built off PC architecture forward. Would you count that as a thing? Like, backwards compatibility in the future? Does that make sense?
If you stick with if we stick with the x86 stuff, and you're saying like it will support this going forward, if that is still the standard or whatever, then sure. Like, I don't, but that's a hard thing to say. Like, I don't know in the future if Intel doesn't just scrap that and make something totally different, and we're in like, oh shit, man, like, what do you do? We got this whole new thing, and you got code whole new, and then you got to make emulators for our x86. Right.
I would imagine that if they came out with something new, it would be on them to go figure out a way to make it compatible with x86, because of all the, like, you don't want to buy a new Tegra chip and like have half your games on Steam all of a sudden unplayable.
Yeah, sure.
So I think any future advancements that would change the x86 architecture were so heavily dependent on x86 architecture that there would be a pretty easy, like, you would have to launch that new system with, it's compatible with x86 architecture. Like, that would have to be one of the first bullet points when trying to integrate a new system. Otherwise, it'd be like, it's like people trying to get Linux off the ground. Like, yeah, like, no programs use Linux. So I'm not either.
A lot, you'd be surprised.
No, I'm saying a lot do. But if you put a Linux system on your PC and then go to Steam, you have about 15% of their catalog to choose from. And that's why a lot of, you know, Steam players don't really run Linux. I mean, some of them do. I'm not saying they don't, but for the most part, it's unless you can work into what's already there, then it's going to be a really hard sell to get a lot of people to convert.
It's all about standardization. Like, the onus on that is on the people who contain the highest market share. So, for example, PlayStation and Nintendo are not doing what Microsoft is doing with backwards compatibility. So people aren't really that focused on it and don't really consider it something that there is.
PC already has backwards compatibility, though.
Well, that's what I was going to mention. That's a different marketplace. The PC marketplace has backwards compatibility. Steam has backwards compatibility for games that are decades old. So on the PC community, if you remove backwards compatibility for games that are, let's say, older than 10 years old, then you'll have people with pitchforks and well, what's the other
thing? You already do have that. If you have games, like, really old games, they'll even say in the description, like, it may not run on systems, or like, it doesn't run as well on current systems. Like, you already have some of that, where when games get, you know, super old, and they don't look right on current monitors, and they're difficult to play, and it, you know, you have all these weird bugs that pop up. Like, that's kind of already a thing.
But that's few and far between.
They are. My point was, though, that if consoles are pretty much just going to let the PC marketplace do all the heavy lifting, and that's the big thing that's changed, is that they're just like, you know, we're just going to take, we built our console out of PC parts, so it can just run the PC game as they already developed it on the PC, so everything just, it's all standardized, it just fucking works now. Like, why would they not continue with that mindset of, you know, like, well, I mean, it's not like we have to put any extra work in, that you could, it already has a low, a medium, and a high, you know, graphics setting. All we have to do is literally patch in, change graphics setting from medium to high. They may not even bother to remove that shit so that people can hack their systems. And you'll see a future where people will be able to hack their systems and be like, yeah, I can artificially, you know, upgrade it and, you know, overclock my console so that I can run it on high. It's bad for the console, but I'm doing it anyway. Like, why would they even take the time as a PC developer? Why would I even really bother to take the time to remove the ability to adjust graphics when I could just lock it away? Because it's a proprietary closed system. Nobody's going to be hacking into their Xbox for the most part. So all I have to do is kind of like the hot coffee mod, lock it behind a wall and just pretend it was never there. It's way easier and way cheaper than taking that shit out. Like, I see a future where games are ported over straight onto consoles from PC with very little change, because they don't need it. They're all made out of PC parts. So,
or maybe quantum computing will become prevalent and emulators will run instantaneously, and it won't fucking matter.
You know, that would be awesome. I'm not saying this is out of the goodness of their heart, Chris. I'm saying that this is an easy way for them to make money without having to do anything.
No, I agree with you. But, like, that would be the dream is virtualization. If you had a machine that was fast enough, like, that's the thing with quantum computing. It's like you have all this processing power. So you have a machine that's fast enough, you could virtualize any system, anything, 100% compatibility, virtualize Windows, Linux, whatever Nintendo runs, you know, Magic OS, whatever the fuck, like, anything, run everything. You have a console that's a little quantum computer that runs everything.
Yeah, Adam, what do you say, man? And then we'll move on to the next question.
Well, what? Because you guys jumped all.
Yeah, no, yeah, we kind of went all over the place. Backwards compatibility. Okay, I don't want to repeat the fucking question.
Good.
Let's move on.
We're still talking about the backward compatibility.
Okay, yeah,
we're the whole thing about the God of War. If they announce a PS5 and they said, hey, these new hot titles, you know, not maybe all of them, but all the hot titles that are out now, Fortnite and whatnot, those are carryover. And if you bought them digital, then you just read
down. Like, yo, they look better on Xbox. Like, would that really matter to people? You know what I'm saying?
It won't really matter because, you know, it depends. It depends on what you want.
It'll matter to the people who just bought the Xbox One. Sorry.
Yeah, but it'll matter to whatever you're looking for. Did it matter to me when I decided to get a PS4 after all those years and Chivos and stuff? Not so much because I saw it as a fresh start and I just liked the interface. So for me, that was a big point. You know, and I know a lot of other people that would love to jump, but they just can't see leaving the Chivo list behind. They're like, yo, I got my gaming score is ridiculous. I can't start over. You know, so for some people, that's a big point. You know, it doesn't matter. Some of them want to play God of War, and they're like, shit, I just can't do it, though. I can't. So,
yeah, the achievements. Yeah, yeah. In trophies, whatever, you know.
Yeah, trophies, same thing. So for some people, those tie them up. So then it does matter on that level. But for backward compatibility, for me, I think it depends on how far they go. I mean, we already talked about this. There's no way with it, you know, going back to PS2 and all that and PS1 games. They do a little here and there, and they still charge you for it. But I don't know if many people give a shit. You know, so it's mainly what's hot now, that type of thing, you know, and I think that's what comes down. But we've seen that too. Their answer, at least the industry's answer, is remasters. That's it.
Yeah.
Some remasters. There you go. There's your backward compatible. We'll sprinkle a little 4K on that shit and then push it back out. Like, eat it up.
Like Sasson, you know.
Yeah, like Sasson. See, it's a whole new meal. It could be just rice and beans, but if you put this shit on it.
Sometimes they don't even do that. I'm looking at you, burnout.
Oh. All right, man. Let's move on here. Life and Times podcast with two interesting questions. All right. For the first one, guys, let me finish the question. And then we'll go. And I'm also talking about myself because even I want to stop the question halfway through. I'm like, wait, what?
Hold up.
Now I just want to interrupt you.
All right. What would you want from this rumored Nintendo Xbox team up? I'm hoping Nintendo makes the console and Xbox backs it with online features, money, the cloud, etc. My man, where the fuck did you hear this from? Like, what weird Reddit subform are you reading this shit from? Nintendo and Xbox team up?
Don't blame this shit on Reddit.
I will blame it on. Okay, then 4chan, whatever. Pick your poison. What internet gutter hole are you going to get this bullshit from, man? Probably Twitter. Jesus.
You want to hear something?
What's up?
Xbox is working with Microsoft is working with every company.
Yeah, it's like
Minecraft.
That's what I'm saying. Is this based off of what's going on with Minecraft? I have not heard about this. This sounds like complete lunacy. But in the spirit of the question, we shall answer it. You know,
are we just treating this as like a what if title?
Yes, the hypothetical list of hypothetical situations. You know,
So the hypothetical is if Microsoft teamed up with Nintendo.
Yes, I know it's fucking insane, but that's the question we presented.
Even in hypotheticals, that doesn't work. But would it really doesn't. Their hardware?
I don't even know.
This isn't Gurren Lagann. You can't shove your Switch into the top of your Xbox, like have it turn into a new mech.
So would it be? I'm thinking. Yeah, if you believe hard enough, man, drill, motherfucker. Okay, so I'm guessing it would be like Microsoft designs the system and Nintendo makes the games.
It would have to be regulating Nintendo to a developer.
Okay, by the way, Brett, I have to stop you because Dip Top is saying that people are saying this because you can log into Xbox Live from a Nintendo console. So that automatically means they're teaming up for a system?
I mean, you can log into anything using the web browser in a friggin' so on the PlayStation.
That is
I can log into Xbox Live right now on my PlayStation.
But I think they're saying is that with the whole Chivo system and how that carries over, that's like
that is some evil Knievel jumping right there. You guys are doing, man. I don't think you know what I you know. I think,
but think about it. Yeah. I mean, then, like, the only thing is that would be awesome because Microsoft already has the Surface. All they need is the damn controls on the side, and there you go. You got Super Switch. You know, so we'll see.
I don't know.
I'm not understanding this. So the leap is from what to?
You know what? I think I'm gonna pull rank and just not answer this question. Yo, my man, Life and Times Wiz, I love you. This question is fucking stupid. I'm sorry. This is dumb. Well, it's you know.
If there was ever a time where, because there's not team up, there's acquisitions. All right, there's you don't generally see two companies go and high five and turn into a power duo. Like that's not really what's going to happen. Yeah. There's not enough.
Yeah.
Nintendo is every time they happen,
someone double crosses. We've seen that with Sega. They get screwed all the time.
Yeah.
So you're talking about a very nationalistic Japanese company, and Microsoft who will eat you for dinner if they can. Like they'll buy you out. Like there's no way that there'll be a team up. It would be the Microsoft throwing money at Nintendo to sell out, or Nintendo going, we have total control over this deal.
What episode was it that you talked about that? Remember, Chris, and they had like $1 billion at Microsoft outside of the whole Xbox.
Oh, yeah, when I did the financials.
Yeah. So if they really wanted to, they could just throw money at something if they wanted to get it.
I said just the revenue generated from Xbox is more money than Nintendo has liquid, like you. When I was explaining the war chest that everybody talks about, Microsoft brings 1.5 times that in just from Xbox Live, right? That money that Nintendo has total in the bank, right? So that, and that's just Xbox. Office is about like 25 times that, you know. So
with Nintendo expecting to move 35 million units by the end of next year, like they're expecting high, like they. It may not be what they're actually worth, but like Nintendo would not sell or give up control at this point. They think they hit a home run. Like they're convinced that this thing is crazy hot. Whether or not they're right doesn't necessarily matter. Like this is a bad time to approach Nintendo and be like, you guys think about selling now or?
You know, Microsoft has made offers, but I don't think Nintendo would.
No, Japanese company. Look at what happened with Capcom. Capcom was in financial distress years ago, and Microsoft threw a shitload of money at them, and they're like, "We can't do it. It's just Japanese going American. They just can't do it."
We can't answer this question. It's just too unrealistic. Too unrealistic.
And they just said, "We'll just give you some games. How about that? You know, how about Dead Rising? You know, we can do partnerships like that." But
maybe it's the fact that you can play certain games with people on Xbox Live.
I can see them doing.
You can play Rocket League against people on Xbox.
Yeah, but this guy's jumping to the whole next thing. It's like, oh, is Microsoft going to make the next Nintendo console? Like, this guy went deep. I think maybe because
a lot of people thinking that the whole Nvidia thing, that deal is dead because of what happened with the board. So they're just looking around. It's like, oh, who else could jump in and say, hey, we got some hardware for you. So, yeah, that's probably what they're looking at. It's far-fetched.
And then they'll say, fuck off, Americans.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll go with somebody else.
Yeah, all right. Let's get to this next question. Now, I tried to edit this question, but I couldn't because I didn't understand what he was asking us. So I'm going to read it as is, and hopefully we could decipher this. Okay. Again, I'm reading it as is. Okay. In light of Nintendo getting overrated with reviews for their games, for instance, Zelda getting a 97 but not God of War, the Metal Gear Solid 5 reviewer camp, the troll reviewers just to attract traffic, Metacritic being used as a metric for what to pay devs, the whole movement against turning players into payers, Destiny, Battlefront, Anthem, For Honor, Shadow War. Do you guys believe modern day reviewers can be trusted without being biased or nostalgic?
I think that right there is the question.
How does all the other stuff fit into the actual question? That's what I think he thinks
that the Metal Gear review, the Metal Gear Solid 5 getting high reviews was not warranted, and Zelda not getting high reviews is not warranted. But I think that the other part of it is an interesting part of it, where it was what was the question? The last part of that again?
You mean the meat of it?
Yeah, the meat of it.
Yeah. Do you guys believe modern day reviewers can be trusted without being biased or nostalgic?
I get the question, because everything he says up until that point is a case. He's legitimizing his question by showing you all the times, like he's saying the fact that Zelda got a higher review score than God of War shows a bias in favor of nostalgia. The fact that these scores can be altered, or that you can have troll, can have internet brigading, and the fact that all of this is tied to what developers actually get paid, so there's a clear incentive to skew the system. With all of these things in mind, legitimizing the question, and all of these problems in the rating system, is the rating system fair to use, or has it been inevitably broken by all the aforementioned things?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so this goes back to the shit we always talk about, review scores. My answer hasn't changed. Don't trust reviewers or review scores. I'm even talking about myself here. Trust yourself. You know, trust people that you actually trust. You know what I'm saying? Don't rely on review scores. Don't just be like, oh, that game has a 9. It must be good. I'm going to buy it. Oh, that game's a 4. It's shit. I'm not going to buy it. Don't trust that stuff. You know?
I think what most people do is they find a certain reviewer that they sort of agree with when it comes to their views on gaming in whole. So they're like, oh, well, this guy usually is on point with the way I see things. So then if he likes it, then there's a good chance I will like it. I think that's how people see it most of the time. I mean, everyone's going to be a little biased because everyone has a history with these things.
Yeah.
So someone's going to say, wow, I'm going to give God of War benefit of doubt because I really like the other ones. Well, that's sort of being biased then, you know. But
you can't eliminate bias. There's always going to be bias no matter what. You could try to be objective. You're going to be always biased. So that's why. But that is a good way of putting it, Adam. It's like, if you really need to hear somebody else's take, find somebody that generally has a good track record for you, you know, and then stick with them.
When you see their review scores, you're like, yeah, that's the way I see those games. He's not thinking Minecraft is a 10 out of 10, you know, for every iteration that they make. No, he sees it the way I see it. So, yeah, I'm going to listen to him.
But see, you guys, you can't. That's the thing is, you can get around being biased. That's one of those weird things where
the fact that you've already played any sort of other video game makes you already biased.
Yeah.
Right. Well, the way
you're already biased in some sort of way, whatever you've ever played in the past.
The fact that you grew up differently than somebody else already makes you biased to certain things. Everybody's biased, man. Can't change that.
Really far down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, we're not going to go down that rabbit hole, though. We've done that before. We do not need to do that.
But my point was that, like, okay, so, like, let's say somebody says something and you get angry, and your natural instinct as your 2-year-old brain is to reach out and smack them. But you don't do that because you recognize that you want to smack them. You recognize that that's probably coming out of your own head, and that that's not really a fair thing to do, and you don't do it. Recognizing your bias goes a long way to diffusing that bias, and that's pretty important. I think the problem actually comes in when you're looking at motives and motivations. You know, I've talked about Freakonomics before, and I'll talk about it again. Apparently, you have to look at the driving force of what is making this person do this thing, and who they're in bed with, and all these other things. So if you're looking at big companies that like IGN, which heavily influence Metacritic and things like that, they have a clear motivation to maintain a good relationship with these developers, even much more so than small places like us do. Their goal is to keep getting access to news so that they can feed it to you, because that's their product. And they're going to do so by first and foremost maintaining a good relationship with a lot of the developers. So their interests and your interests aren't necessarily aligned. Whereas if you go to a small podcaster or a YouTuber or something like that, their interests are in getting you to watch their videos so that they can sell ad revenue. Whether or not this has to do with, you know, sucking the developer's dick or providing entertainment, engaging content is something you have to sniff out for yourself. But there are people like, I'll take this opportunity to blow our horn. Like I have no fucking reason to be here. That's why I can get away with saying outrageous and stupid shit, because like, I don't have to fucking answer to anybody. I'm not getting review copies of anything. I'm not getting paid to be here. No, I don't have to keep good graces with anybody. I don't have anybody in the game industry that I have to play nice with, which is the reason that I can probably be the most loose-lipped of just about anybody here. I can say shit that Tony and Manny can't, because I won't have to pay the consequences for it. That's and I'm not being paid to say this shit or to not say this shit. So you can tell that whether or not I'm speaking out of my ass at the time, I genuinely believe it, because that's where my motivation lies. So I think you really have to look at what's driving the people. And if what's driving the people is selling products or confusing you or misleading you, then that's bad. But there are legitimate people out there who their goal is to inform you and to entertain you and to make you happy with, you know, their product, which is getting you to watch this thing. So those are the people that maybe you do want to keep an eye on. So it's a case by case basis, but you definitely want to ask yourself, why do these people want me watching their thing?
It's an interesting thing, because, you know, nowadays actual game media is not controlled by the actual people that that get these things. Like, in other words, back in the day, who really supported a video game magazine? It was the sales of the video game magazine, and in addition to, you know, buying ad space to help, you know, help it. But in general, it was the people that made these sorts of things happen. Nowadays, with free media like IGN and a lot of the other sites, where are they mainly getting their stuff from? They're mostly beholden to the developers and not trying to burn any sort of bridges. So if they can give a bad review a lot of times, but it can't give a smolderingly bad review unless it's something that they have no stake in. Like, in other words, there isn't a big flashing ad on the top of their page,
You went somewhere differently than I thought you were going to. I thought you were going to say that, because you said game magazines back in the day used to get paid by actual magazine sales, right? And then, and I'm just going to throw this in because it's true. Companies like IGN, you know, stuff like that, they get paid through other companies that own them. You know, bigger media companies that own them, you know?
Yeah, bigger media. In other words, they're mostly getting, you know, bigger media companies, or they're getting ad revenue from specific video game companies.
Yeah.
And the fact that they have, because they kind of have to play nice with these guys, obviously they can't start breaking rumors and stories that they've heard.
Yeah, just to tie it all together, basically, since a lot of these big companies are owned by even bigger companies, they don't want to upset the game developers or publishers, so we'll keep them in line, you know?
You don't piss off who's paying you. And back in the day, the people paying these companies were us, the people buying the magazines. So they were a direct interest to make sure that we were happy and that we were taken care of. Then somewhere along the line, when they switched to free media, they were bought by bigger companies, and now who's paying them? Somebody who has an agenda to push, who wants to sell a game, or wants to make sure that people don't get pissed off, who wants to homogenize a message. So I think that's a great rule of thumb.
Why do you think that some of these companies essentially release instant retraction letters after the community starts to come down on them? Because they don't want that running back to everybody else.
Yeah, we could give you examples and name names. We're not going to do that here.
No, we're not going to do that.
Dude, I give you a great example of a whole fucking movement that started after an email was found with collusionary headlines.
We're not going to go down that rabbit hole, but I'm pretty sure people know exactly what we're talking about. If you don't, refer to Throwdown Episode 1, released in September 2014. You know?
Yeah, it's a thing. It's the sad thing is that there is going to be some sort of bias when it comes to a lot of these sorts of companies, you know, especially, you know, the first question you have to ask yourself is, where are they getting funded from?
Yeah.
It's the whole Gawker Media thing too. Like, a big problem with this is, like, there are so many outlets owned by one corporation or one person that portray themselves as being 10, 12, 14, 20 different fucking voices that are all speaking in unison and all saying the same thing.
I also say, like, you know, and to be honest, also YouTubers are not infallible either. A lot of the bigger YouTubes, what are the YouTubers? What do they get? They get a free copy of a game so that they can react to.
not to go down a rabbit hole, but I would say YouTubers are actually less credible than actual like traditional game journalists. You know, at least those guys have to adhere to some kind of standard. YouTubers don't give a fuck. Like, you give me money, sure, I'll hawk your fucking game. You know, I'll say it's the greatest thing ever.
And that's why that's where the whole big scandal where that they had to start saying specifically that videos were sponsored by these companies. They didn't used to do that.
They know they didn't.
When you see what's his face, MatPat, and guys like that doing videos of game theories all of a sudden about God of War. Well, they were paid to do that sort of stuff a lot of the time.
Yeah,
exactly. But he's not reviewing a game though.
Oh no, he's not reviewing.
To be fair, he's making up theories and stuff. So if he gets paid for that, everyone consider.
I know that.
There were reviewers though, and I'm not gonna say who it was, but that they get contracts from publishers and give them favorable reviews. It was like some dirty dealings.
Yeah,
it's like what the music industry was accused of doing with the radio, where they essentially were instead of the music companies were not exactly giving the radio companies money, but they were giving them a bunch of other things so that they would have continuously play their song X amount of times per day.
That's a good point. All right, man. Let's move on here to the next question. This one's from Straight, aka Young Savage. Okay, this is a very interesting question. How come developers don't release canceled games? I ask this because they usually cancel games about 75% of the way through the development process. Why not just release what you have and let people do what they want with it? Maybe some modder will pick it up and finish it for fun. Let me ask you a question. Why don't they release half-finished movies? How come they don't release half-finished TV shows? How come they don't release exactly half-finished cars? How come they don't release half-cooked food? You know?
Well, you see what happens when they release half-finished movies.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the thing is, exactly, that is exactly the reasons, because people are viewing it. It's not just a simple factor of just releasing the code for everybody to see. It's also, you're releasing a product. You're releasing an unfinished product that you're expecting everybody else to fix. No, that's not the way it works.
You just brought up a good point, though. You just brought up a good point. Why not release the code then?
Well, they can. I mean, you have Unreal Engine. So what Epic will do is like they'll take the engine out and the assets and then release it like that. That's perfectly fine. But there's a lot of proprietary stuff. Like DICE is not going to give you Frostbite. They're not gonna open source Frostbite and stuff. They consider that proprietary. EA just hawking that shit. So if they cancel a game, they're holding on to that shit. They don't want any of that getting out. Like their IP and all this stuff. They're very weird about that. There's some companies Nintendo would never give you an engine or anything like on whatever. They'd rather finish it. I mean they freaking put Star Fox 2 on the SNES Classic to finish that shit or whatever, or just did enough to make
The game was working. That game was done. And they just said, oh yeah, we have a Nintendo 64, whatever.
But to say like a 75% finished game, like that would reflect badly on the company because
exactly
like you're looking at it from a modern perspective of like, oh, I would do this and take it. If somebody else sees that, they'd be like, wow, what garbage is this? Like who would put this out? This is not finished. That's the impression that would leave people, and they would not trust the company. It reflects badly on them if they do that, right?
I'm sorry, I'm thinking about Sea of Thieves right now. Oh. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I mean, there's that kind of integrity and reflection. Like, I mean, they may go back. They may shelve something. Movies get shelved too, and they come back to it and they change it, whatever, and it gets released finally. So they may have like they go, oh, this product has potential, and we'll revisit it, right? So they're not going to give it out to you to try it. They'll shelve it and then come back to it later. And if they don't, they don't, right? But they'll hold on to that IP. So, you know, it's not a good argument to say why don't they do that. There's a multitude of reasons.
Yo, Chris, Mighty Nerd says, he goes, hey, Chris, you're wrong. Look at PUBG with a smiley face.
Someone say the same thing about No Man's Sky.
You know? And look what happens with all those cases. People were pissed off, you know?
Yeah exactly.
So, yeah, that's why you're not going to get half-finished games out there. It would just look bad for everybody, you know? Nobody would benefit from that.
I don't think that everybody, I don't think the Joe Blow would be that understanding. It's like, well, this was a game that they were going to release, but they decided not to, but I'm just going to take it as is. No, they're not going to do that.
Well, dude, look what happens with betas. People get pissed off like, guys, it's a beta. It's a beta. Exactly. Yeah. Why doesn't this shit work? Why isn't there more content? It's like, because it's a beta, maybe?
Yeah.
Why are we assuming that if somebody abandons a game 75 to 80% of the way through the development, there is a viable and fun game there that just
there's not even a good game there.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's like, what if you're 75% of the way through and the game is fucking shit?
Yeah, no, Blizzard has been known to do that. They'll be like 3/4 of the way through the game, be like, it's honestly not fun, and they'll pitch it. And I've seen people who have got the code for those later, and you look at them and they're like, oh yeah, not only do they look rough because they never got polished, but they're also not fun. So they look terrible, and they play terrible, and they're just kind of a fatally flawed idea from the ground up. Oh, that's probably why they ditched it. That's like asking somebody like, oh, you baked a whole batch of cookies and then threw them in the trash. Why didn't you give them to me? And you're like, well, they weren't very good. And you're like, well, I would have put some icing on them. And you're like, no, you don't understand. They were bad enough to throw away. If I could have just put some icing on them, I would have put icing on them. But they were bad enough to go, fuck this, and throw in the trash.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point, you know? Oh, man. All right, anybody else want to jump in? Dip Top said scale bound. Oh, man. That was one of the rumors. One of the rumors, like, the game was just not good. You know, that's one of the rumors.
The rumor was that, that game was not good at all.
Man.
Oh, you mean like Crackdown 3?
Shit.
That shit right now?
Yeah, but that's a good point. It's like, don't assume that just because the game is done 75% of the way meets it's good. It may just be shit, you know? Yeah. All right.
Could have went that far and then showed it to the actual people paying for it. I'm like, what the hell is this crap? But I don't know, man. I'm sorry. This is what we came up with. And I'm fine.
You want to see the other game we're making? Call Nier Automata.
You know about that?
hey, what do you think about that game? We have this other game that's in development. It's called Nier Automata. What do you think of that one?
Like, and by the way, this game came out good because we put all the money in that game. Oh,
yeah, right. That's my theory.
Good thing you guys helped us develop this engine. We wouldn't have made Nier without this one. Yeah. Thanks,
Are we getting that one? Oh, no. You guys ain't getting this one. You're getting this other shit in the corner. Joey, show them that shit.
Dip Dop is like, how's Deep Down? Don't be surprised if that shit got canceled, son.
Oh, yeah. I know what Deep Down is. It's Monster Hunter.
It's Monster Hunter. All right, man. Let's move on. Speaking about Mr. Dip Dop Doopity, he has a question for us. Okay. With the fads from last generation ranging from Guitar Hero, Rock Band, Minecraft, and now the Battle Royale genre, can you speculate on what the next fad could be, perhaps in 2020, 2021? What will be the next fad?
Character-based battle royale game. So essentially Overwatch and battle royale combined.
Push them together.
I
like that one. Yeah.
VR versions.
Oh, yeah, just add all that shit. Yep.
You're in the freaking PUBG. What? Running around. You get sensors. You stick them up on the walls, you know, and you just jump in there. You even get that German one that they had for the gloves and stuff that actually burn you and pinch you and shit. And you get the chest piece.
Pinch you? What the fuck?
Yeah. It actually shocks you and shit if you start getting hurt.
The pain station?
Yeah, the pain station.
I like
the
mod.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, you know? I mean, we know they have a problem porting high fidelity graphic games or high fidelity games into VR. So this thing should just be a perfect fit.
Yeah. By the way, Dip Dop, you answered your own question. He goes cardboard.
That's the future.
Cardboard. No, well, now that's
loot
a different
box stuff. Royale. You guys are crazy.
You make your own fun.
You make your own fun. Here. Play-Doh. Yeah. What do you think you could do with it?
Oh, shit.
what if that was a new thing where it's like the Play-Doh gets into it. Fisher Price gets into it. It's like, oh, if you scan it in, you can make yourself a video game character.
The next fad will be VR porn.
Isn't VR porn a thing?
It is, but it's going to blow up. Have you seen it? The whole contraption that you put over your dick and stuff? It's going to blow up, man. I'm telling you. Have you guys not seen that shit?
I'm lay with you.
This is a kid show.
Times are hard right now, so
it's crazy. Yeah, loot box royale. Okay, I don't know, man. Who knows? Whatever the next fad is, it's probably going to be fucking annoying.
It's going to be annoying,
as they always are.
And if it, and you mentioned 2020, so it's not too far away. So I would say the God of War clones.
Oh shit! Yeah, right. Bad ones, right? We're gonna get Dante's Inferno 2. It's coming back.
Oh shit! Dante's back.
Oh yeah, can't wait.
All right.
Anybody use Aztec gods yet?
Yeah, right. Let's go for that. All right, and the final question here from Mr. Matt Wheaton. Okay, do you think From Software will go back to making mech games like Armored Core or another Centuries episode? Also, what mech games do you enjoy? That's two questions. So let's answer the first one.
You didn't follow the rules. No, it's okay.
Yeah.
No, I got the answer for the second one. The best is Titanfall 2. That's the best mech game. That's a good
one. My answer is Virtual On.
Oh, damn you.
Brett, that's your answer. Yeah, but, hey, I'm sorry, but you know I'm right.
There is a Virtual On game.
Yeah, man, it's coming.
You remember?
Yeah, we got another one coming.
It's coming.
Isn't the best mech game like just some of those Metal Gear Solid parts when they're on the mech?
Yeah, those are pretty hot.
There's only one that you actually fight as a mech.
Yeah, there's four. The only time you ever if that would be hilarious. It's like Metal Gear's a favorite mech game, and you don't even get in the mech. You just fight them.
Yo, but the one part is so hot
in the game too. I don't remember.
Yeah. Like, yo, but that one part is so hot. It's better than any mech game ever.
A great mech game.
Ooh, Armored Warriors by Capcom. That is a very good game.
Mm.
Remember that? Yeah, BattleTech. That's what Shinosky says.
I liked MechWarrior 2 Mercenaries was a great game on the PC back in the day.
Phantom Vash said, From Software already confirmed one of the three games they currently are working on is Armored Core.
Okay, so they answer that question then.
Okay, there you go.
Who said no? Who said no in here? I heard some motherfuckers say no.
I don't know.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah,
I said,
fuck you, Carlos. It was you, son. I heard that.
Like, no! Run that shit back, man. No!
Oh, man. Okay, so there's the answer. Yes, they are making one.
It's nice to see it back. That was like the big demo of the PlayStation 2, you know, at the time.
I'm not really a mech game guy, though. You know what I'm saying?
I'm not like as far as mech games go, I haven't like gone out specifically to get them. They've kind of just appeared and like, oh, hey, this one's pretty cool. I wasn't actually a big fan of the Armored Core, you know, games. And I feel like when the Armored Core games got older, they kind of got crappier, to be honest.
Uh-oh.
And I guess we're only talking about 3D mech games, right?
Yeah, I mean,
Armored Warriors is not 3D, you know? That's a 2D side-scrolling game.
Let's be honest, it was not a great time to make mech games the last time we had mech games come out. Like, the technology really wasn't there. Because part of any good mech game should be customizing your mech and your loadout and the physics and things like that. Like, they didn't really have physics engines really down pat very well. They didn't have enough space to really be able to customize, like... And think about it, like, you couldn't even, like, you got, like, maybe four or five paint jobs in those days. Like, that, these days, you buy that shit as DLC, and it downloads in half a second. So, now they could actually have a mech game where you could change out parts and skins and have online and do all the things that a true mech game should have. So,
Brett, you like that one VR mech game?
Oh, Rigs?
Rigs? Yeah, Rigs. I actually really liked Rigs, but that was not, there was not any real customization in that. I like that for a whole different...
Or not that much of a game in
either.
Yeah, no, it was more of an e-sport. But it's just as much of a game as any sports game.
Ooh, before, Gun Griffin. There you go, Callo.
Right? Before like 3D, I mean, all the mech games were pretty much shoot 'em up games. So I don't know, like, I don't know which one. Do we need to choose one out of both of those genres? Or
no,
both of
those? Pick whatever you want. It doesn't matter. It's all mech games. Mech games are mech games.
Super Dimension Fortress Macross. On SNES.
Oh shit.
Makuros.
Yeah. A AAA Exo Squad game would be pretty awesome.
Exo Squad.
Gundam Side Story 079, Kal-El also says.
Oh, Gundam.
Gundamu. Did you guys ever play Steel Battalion? I never played that. Was that the one that cost like $200?
That was with that $250.
Yeah, nobody played that shit. Yeah.
I played it. I didn't own it. Played it.
There was an NES game. I can't remember the name of it. It's worth a lot, and it was like a mech game. It was Iron Something.
Are you sure it wasn't Armored Warriors on SNES, bro? I'm surprised you didn't know that game.
Was it called Armored Warriors?
Yeah, look it up. It's a 2D mech game, and you know it's 2D side scrolling. You go around shooting shit with your mech, and you could actually get out of the mech too, during certain points.
No, okay. There was another game like that where you couldn't get out of the mech.
Okay.
But Armored Warriors was awesome. But that's not the one I'm thinking.
Yo, man, it's crazy.
Yeah, but those games are. I'll throw Metal Slug in there because he could get in the tanks of the robots.
That is true.
Actually, oh my bad. I'm getting Armor Warriors confused with this other because Capcom did a lot of games. Armor Wars is actually a arcade beat 'em up game. Yes, that game is fun. But the one I'm thinking about, now I'm losing the name, but you could actually get out of your mech. I think it was Konami that did that one. Konami used to make so many good games back in the day, man. Fuck.
Blaster Master.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we pretty much answered this. So yeah, we're gonna pretty much call it a wrap here. So again, I don't know when Riku is going to do another one of these Final Fantasies, but it'll be eventually. You know,
yeah, he just got his platinum on God of War. So.
Oh shit!
So good stuff. So yeah, like we kind of gave him free reign to do them whenever he wanted to. Just the caveat is on Thursdays and Sundays.
Yeah. You know. Yeah, we just on Thursdays and Sundays don't stream, but you know, during that at night. But anytime after that, go ahead. As for me, because I'm also going to be doing my own streaming thing, the Tony Tries thing. Originally, I was going to do it on Monday. I'm going to do it Tuesday because I actually have a lot of shit to do on Monday because embargoes lift for specific things on Tuesday. So I got to have that shit ready. So Tuesday night, I'll be playing Fortnite for you guys. So we'll see how that goes, man. I'll be playing 8 p.m. Eastern, so people are awake to see me suffer. You know, we'll see how that goes. So far.
I just had one more thing. Yeah. Last question. Cybernator on Super Nintendo.
Oh.
Cybernator.
And that was a Konami game, I believe.
I wonder if that's the one I was thinking about.
Cybernator was, Konami.
That may be the one I'm thinking about.
Is there a movie called Cybernator?
The Cybernator.
Cybernator.
Right now.
And on NES, there was a game called Metal Mech, and you could get out of the mech.
Oh, shit.
The game I was thinking of was Metal Storm.
Ooh, Metal Storm.
Yeah, that was a great mech game. Okay, and that was it.
Metal band, welcome. We are Metal
Storm. We are Metal Storm. You know. Oh, man. All right, so let's wrap this motherfucker up. So thank you for watching and listening. Leave us the questions in the comment section of this episode here on YouTube or over on The Coalition. We'll answer them on next week's show. Subscribe to Throwdown on SoundCloud, iTunes, and YouTube. Follow us on Twitch, Mixer, Twitter, and Facebook at Throwdown Show. Links are located in the description below. Once again, I was your host, Tony Polanco. Tonight's joined by Emilio Lopez.
See you later, guys.
Chris Seeley.
Hey, take care, everyone.
Carlos Romero.
Laters.
Brett Murdoch.
See everybody.
And Adam Vail.
Yeah, have a good week, people.
All right, man. Sucker free Sunday, right?
Yeah, sucker free Sunday.
All right, guys. We'll see you around, man. Peace out.
Later.
Deuces.